Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Today's listener essay by Barbara Redfield is entitled, It's Over.
14 years after my divorce, it's finally over. It feels like an eternity. 20 years of marriage and almost as many years to recover. I cannot count the times I have thought to myself, okay, now it's finally over. But it never was. Once again, there would be something that would trigger an emotional tsunami. Often unexpected, a heart-stopping moment when I could feel the adrenaline rush. If I was able, in that moment, to observe myself, I came to a dead stop. No breath, no motion of any kind, frozen in place until I was able to remind myself to breathe once again. Sometimes it would come as an email message in the midst of incoming ads that I was deleting, or a voicemail suddenly there as I was making a list of calls to be returned, or the mention of his name by an old friend from our pathwork days inquiring about him, or a song on the radio loaded with memories of going to a Paul Simon concert, or the score of the New York Ranger game the night before, or the antique clock that had not been running since he was the one to remember to wind it once a week, or the headline on NPR, for which he always had a sarcastic comment, or someone ordering a chocolate-covered donut, his all-time favorite. This last year, there have been more of these events as we plan the wedding of our only child together. He has a new family now with two small children that is collapsing around him. Restraining orders, mandated anger management, AA programs, career traumas, not a pretty picture. All of which created a magnetic pull for me, the penultimate rescuer. There is nothing I like better than to be the healer. I'm the one who steps into the disaster zone to fix it all. I could finally be recognized as the only one who could heal his wounds. He was saying some of the appropriate things, acknowledging his part in making a mess of his life, but only just far enough to pull me into a conversation. I was hooked, once again, in thinking I was needed. My fantasy was that he would finally realize that I was his soulmate, that he loved me and only me above all others. It was just around the corner. I invited him to bring his new children to come for a weekend visit, knowing that they would fall in love with the magical place where I live, on a lake, in the mountains, and with me, the perfect fairy godmother. Fall in love with me they did. Strange to realize that his parenting skills were not what I remembered. These needy children reaching out to him were confronted by a guy sitting in a rocking chair in front of the fire, playing a game on his iPhone. Maybe he was not the magical father I remembered. We got down to the final planning of our daughter's wedding. His divorce from his wife, my successor, was a royal mess. He informed me that he was bringing his new girlfriend to the wedding. He accused me of being a prude when I reminded him that he was still married, and I did not think it was appropriate to bring his new girlfriend to the wedding. The wedding ceremony included a prayer from each parent. His blessing was a description of the things that Harvel Hendricks states are essential for a vibrant marriage in his book, Getting the Love You Want. He did mention that I was the one who introduced him to these principles, conveniently forgetting to mention that I had dragged him, kicking and screaming, to a workshop with Harold Hendrix. He proceeded to lay out all the things that he had been unwilling to do to help our marriage survive, but that he suggested our daughter and her new husband follow. I doubt if anyone at the ceremony heard the blessing the way I did, but to my ears, he gave a description of how and why our marriage failed. The irony was difficult to escape. Needless to say, the new girlfriend was at his side at the parents' table, along with her comfort dog, who ate from plates at the table. When he got up to give his father of the bride toast, he began by describing our daughter being pulled from my stomach with the cord wrapped around her neck. He continued to recount his story of how she immediately stopped crying when she was handed to him. He went on to say that this moment was the beginning of his close relationship with her, a relationship that, in his words, some had characterized as too close. He neglected to mention that the some he referred to were educational professionals who were concerned that he was treating her like a girlfriend instead of a daughter. The pièce de résistance, however, was the morning after the wedding. As we gathered for the next day brunch at 10 a.m., he and his girlfriend were nowhere to be found. His young children had been in my house since early in the morning. At 11 a.m., I went to my friend's house to look for him, as the agreement was that he needed to be packed up and out of the house at 10 a.m. in time for the brunch. He was there in bed with his new girlfriend. In that moment, a shift happened. It was over. There's a saying, it's not over until the fat lady sings. I am a rather robust 72-year-old woman. I have found myself singing and humming almost constantly since that moment. Like Kate Smith at the beginning of the New York Ranger games played a half century ago, I feel that I'm bringing and ringing good luck to everyone and everything I encounter as I sing and hum along into the next phase of my life.
Barbara Redfield lives in Big Indian, New York. She is a teacher, a writer, and an artist. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.